You are now listening to the Heroes for Sale podcast. Whether you are a new collector or a seasoned pro, on a daily basis, I cover topics to help you grow your hobby knowledge and strategies to make you money in the market. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Adam. I am your host on today's... before we get into the episode, Lakers are the champions. I have very conflicting feelings about this because as a Celtics fan... You know, I don't think I have to tell you or anybody in the audience that's also a Celtics fan that we don't really like LeBron. We don't really like the Lakers. So it's like, yes, I'm happy that, you know, I think that LeBron and Brady are also similar, but I think Brady is closer to LeBron than LeBron is closer to Brady, if that makes sense. So kind of to explain that would be like Brady in the Super Bowls, Brady could easily have the same record in the finals, like, because they've both been in the finals for almost every single year. They're the Super Bowl, NBA finals, whatever. They both have been in these series of games almost every year. I mean, they're at least in the conference finals almost every single year, except for LeBron last year was hurt and they didn't make it to the playoffs, so that was unfortunate. But then they got Anthony Davis, that's phenomenal, and then they win. And the Lakers roster is pretty interesting. It's got some interesting characters. So also I'm conflicted because like Rondo was on the Celtics team that won the championship, and now he's winning a championship with the Lakers and LeBron. Dwight Howard gets a championship. Kuzma, you know, Al Caruso gets a championship. Let's see, I mean, who else? There's Caldwell Pope, there is, I guess DeMarcus Cousins is eligible for a ring, even though I don't know how. Oh, actually, you know, I think he opted out. So I think he was on the team and he opted out, so that sort of makes sense. Dion Waiters, it's funny, I saw something. Dion Waiters would have been eligible for a ring either way because he played enough games with the Heat this season that he would have been eligible for a ring if the Heat have won, and since he's on the Lakers, if they won, that he would have got a ring. But so back to my comparison with Brady and LeBron, and then we'll get into the episode. So LeBron, Brady in the championship every year. Brady did it with one team. LeBron has done it with a bunch of teams. That I don't think that really has too much to do with it. I mean, Brady, I think, could easily have a very similar record in the finals to LeBron. But I also see the thing that's interesting with Brady is like he could be like 9-0, but he also could be like 0-9 because there was never, other than the Rams Super Bowl, there was never any of the other Super Bowls were never really easy wins. Like they never won like the series. And I'm using the series as a like, in quotations here, they never won the series 4-2, if that makes sense. It was always, almost every single game came down to game 7, won it in the final game, last quarter of the game. But I think that's cool. So that's why I think Brady is close to LeBron, where LeBron has won championships, but the ones that he's lost, and also the ones that he's won, I mean, other than... Like, the 3-1 finals against the Warriors is very similar to the Atlanta Super Bowl, where down 3-1, no one's ever come down from 3-1. Down 28-3, no one's ever come back. No one's ever come back from in the fourth quarter, I don't think. Or something, maybe it was a statistic, I don't remember. But either way, so that, congrats to LeBron, congrats to the Lakers. You know, they did it for Kobe. Obviously, that's phenomenal. That's really cool. I'm glad that... You know, it just sucks. Like, I think I talked about it on the Kobe episode back in February. Like, he dedicated his whole life to basketball in the year where he, and it's not like people didn't say that he was the best. Like, he's probably a top 5 player of all time. But, like, he dedicated his whole life in the one year that was supposed to be all about him. Like, all about him. First of all, the Hall of Fame gets canceled. Hall of Fame inductions get canceled. Second of all, you know, obviously the tragedy happens. So that sucks too. So I'm happy for LeBron. I'm happy for the Lakers. even though I'm conflicted as a Celtics fan, whatever. So now we'll move into the episode. So the point of this episode is going to be what I think is probably one of the best strategies for making money long-term with sports cards. And I think, so Gary, this is a concept that Gary Vee has talked about in the past. And if you follow any of his content, it's kind of something that he has done in general, where at the National, there's a video of someone asking him, I'm blanking on who it was, and I know the face. I forget the person's name, so I'm really sorry about that. But I know I can see the face, and I hate when this happens. But they asked him the question, how would you make $1 million in sports cards? And his response was slowly. And I think for myself, at least, that concept really rings true, because a lot of the cards that I bought, a lot of the money that I've made on cards was when I didn't exactly see, when I saw something that I feel like the market didn't. So last summer, granted, I think most of the market last summer and compared to now is totally different. It's up and it's down and it looks a lot different than it did. And I think a lot of people, a lot of names within the card industry have a little bit more respect. So, I mean, something that, like, one example is Mbappe. I was buying Mbappe cards last summer for $40 for the base PSA 10, so $100 for the silvers. You heard this story before. I was buying those cards, and in my mind, I wasn't going to be selling those cards until 2022 or even 2026. Now, the market has caught up way quicker than I expected, and I still have cards and grading. I still have two base PSA 10s, and I still have one of the silvers. I've sold some of the cards because the market was just like, how can I not sell now? The money, like I've talked about in some of those episodes, was the money was going towards the wedding. So those were a couple reasons why I did sell. Now, if I didn't need to sell, I wouldn't have, because those cards, I still think holding them for the long term, like I still think one of those Mbappe silvers with like a pop report of like 200 is probably going to be one of his best cards. It's going to be one of the cards that's, because you look at cards that are in the 300s. I mean, just for an example, LeBron PSA 10 base chrome is going for, last time I checked, it was at 7K. It might be a little bit higher, a little bit lower, especially after the championship. And actually, let me go to see if I can find a price right now. I think Card Hops posted something about this. Oops, Card Hops posted about the LeBron Chrome. I was completely incorrect. It's 13,000. So that card, there are like, I think there's like 1,000 PSA 10s. So I don't necessarily think that Mbappe is going to be or will be as big as LeBron in the big picture, but I do think that LeBron owns Liverpool, part of Liverpool. Mbappe is rumored to go to Liverpool. LeBron and Mbappe are both Nike athletes, so there's that connection there. And I just think that the fact that there's five times less Mbappes, those were some of the reasons why I was buying them then. And one of the reasons why I'm probably still hold for a while. I mean, depending on kind of how the next year goes and with everything, if stuff gets kind of crazy with like work or with some of the content stuff, maybe I'll sell it so that way I can fund whatever I need to fund if I need to. But I would hope to be able to hold those cards for quite some time. Another example is going to be the Shaq cards I was buying, because I was buying the Topps PSA 10s for like $20 a piece. Like, I think I bought two PSA 10s of the Topps, regular Topps, and then I bought a couple of the Fleer black jersey cards that I sold, and I think those ones I bought for $30 as well. And I was buying those cards thinking that those would be like 5-10 year holds, because I just was looking at what the market was back then. And I was saying, I mean, these cards are $25 to $30 right now. Like, in my head, I was like, why? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then even Kobe, too. Kobe was maybe a little bit of a longer term hold. And I think things changed with that situation, obviously. But if none of that had happened, that was a hold for a year, and that was going to be until he made the Hall of Fame. Because I was looking at, I was saying $100 for a PSA 10 Topps rookie, like, that should be way higher, especially because at the time, I think LeBron's were like $400 or $500 at the time. Now I think they're probably in the $3,000 to $4,000 range, if I had to guess. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but based off of the chrome price, I'm pretty sure. Or yeah, probably $3,500 to $4,000 to $5,000 maybe. But that's another. Those are some examples of like basketball stuff. And then same with like Tim Duncan and KG. I said it to myself that these cards in a year from now will probably be more popular, but I also gave myself a timeline. And I think when you're doing that, the longer you can wait on some of the things, like the longer you can wait on these cards is probably going to be safer. Now, if you're buying 2017, 2018, 2019 rookies, and I think that's going to be something that I talk about more in the future as well, you probably don't have as much time to wait. Like, granted, if you were buying Jason Tatum's at last summer for $40 and now they're $400, $500, or even maybe higher. I'm not 100% sure. They might even be higher than that. I bet you they were probably in the 1,000 range, I bet. I don't remember. But either way, if you were buying those cards, Tatum should be someone that, I mean, he's going to win championships. So I don't know. I sold my select card that I bought that for $75. I sold it for $350. I probably should have waited a little bit longer, but I was selling the stuff kind of before the wedding, all this kind of stuff. So I mean, realistically, I would have liked to not have sold anything, but I had to. But a lot of the stuff that I was buying was either a year hold. I mean, some of the stuff, let's see, I mean, some of the select cards I was buying of like Donovan Mitchell, and I bought those in March. I had planned on selling them for the playoffs because I did some of the data analysis that I was doing with comparing prices of certain players, Luka and Trey Prism and Select, comparing those to like Jason Tatum and then Donovan Mitchell, and I saw that they should be higher in price even if the Prism doesn't go up. The Prism went up, so I sold those during the playoffs. Like I said, I was going to sell them during the playoff or during the season. I sold them during the season. I don't think I sold them during the playoffs. I don't know if they went up. I don't think they did. On average, I sold them for around $110, $115, I think. So they may have even gone up, but I think we're going to see. I think we'll see an interesting dip this off season because it's going to be shorter. So I don't know what exactly the dip is going to look like. I think we've already seen it with like the Giannis cards and the Luka cards. They've already gone down pretty significantly. I think they are starting to even off a little bit. But I also think that people need to recognize that like last summer or last offseason, these cards were ridiculously inexpensive. Like I think sometimes we can get, not we, but people in the sports card industry can get kind of blinded by the fact that a card either went up or went down, and we forget that, you know, just 9 to 10 months ago, these cards were nothing. Like, they weren't really, like, if you were buying, even last season, these Luka cards were still $40, $50, $60, and now we're looking at $700, $800, $1,000, $2,000, like all these crazy prices on these cards that just 10 months ago weren't anything. And I think sometimes we can get blindsided in a way. And well, yeah, I think I said blindsided. I don't think that's exactly what I mean. I think I mean like we can get caught up. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Caught up in the fact that the card went from 2,000 to 1,100, or it went from 2,000 to 1,200 or 1,300. However you're looking at a graph or whatever time period you're looking at it, sometimes we can look at that and say, and we can get nervous because we're like, whoa, it went down 50%, even though it went up like 300%. We think that the 50% loss, like granted, if you were buying at the peak and you lost 50% of your money, that probably hurts, but I don't know, maybe it's not even really savvy. I don't know, I think it's, maybe as a content creator, I need to try and talk about the off season more, because I talk about all the heights and all the highs, but maybe I think I talk about when to be buying cards, but maybe not as much as I should. And I don't know if it's, I think we're going to see, because the rules also, I think, are going to be rewritten here. Like, the rule is that you should wait for the off season, but this is the first off season we have for basketball where we're seeing the market at such a high, where last season, you know, I was still making content and stuff and buying, but you don't see the crazy highs of these cards compared to where they were. So the long-term approach, which if you're talking long-term, that's where you should almost be looking at maybe even vintage, maybe just some older cards, because if you're buying newer rookies, I think you're going to run into some trouble. Hold on 1 second. I'm trying to... you're going to run into some trouble where if they don't... If a player has a good first couple seasons and then they either get hurt or they just for whatever, maybe they get a payday, maybe they're in Jason Tatum's year and they get their first NBA contract and they're like, that's it, that's all I really needed. That's a realistic possibility for some players, for sure, because with the NBA, once you sign that contract, all your money is guaranteed every single year. It's not like the NFL, where if you sign a monster contract and then 2 years into the contract you stink, they can just cut you, and sure, you have guaranteed money, but for the most part, a lot of that contract is not guaranteed. Same with the MLB. And I think that's why we have seen sometimes when somebody gets, I think a good example, maybe Chandler Parsons, maybe that's what happened, where Chandler Parsons was one of these hot prospects. If you were buying Chandler Parsons when he signed that huge contract, he just went on to not have a good rest of his career. You know, another player, I'd have to look into this probably a little bit more. Chandler Parsons is just the first name that pops into my head when I'm using this example. But Chandler Parsons was one of the hottest players in the league when he signed this monster contract. And then he just kind of wasn't good for the rest of his career, like I just said. So I think that is a realistic possibility, because if I don't know, hypothetically, say you are a basketball player and you don't really like basketball, because this is also a possibility. There's people, look at people that literally work in real life. There's people that work at a job that they're good at, but they don't like. So to think that there aren't NBA players that are doing that, I just don't think is realistic. I think a very realistic scenario is that somebody in high school finds out, or they're playing and maybe they tried really hard in high school, maybe they liked it in high school and they got really, really good, and then they go to college and then they get drafted, and then they get drafted and it's like, I've been playing basketball for, you know, I don't know, 20, if they're getting drafted at 21, let's just say 15 years, like since they were 6 or 7. And they've been, and the amount that they've been playing basketball is probably to a point where I'm not going to say you could add a few years to how old they are, but the percentage time that they've played basketball compared to what other people have done, you know, there aren't people in the marketing industry. There may be, but realistically, there probably aren't people in like the marketing industry or any other industry that have been in it since they were 6 or 7, and also spent 50% of their time from seven until 21 doing the thing. So there's probably players that get to the NBA and they're still really good. Maybe they're a top 30 player in the league, maybe a top 50. I don't know exactly, but then they get a big contract and they're like, you know, I don't really like basketball in the first. And it's not that they don't like it, but they're just like, I don't really want to play as much as I used to. Or maybe they got married and they started a family and they want to spend more time with their family and they're not as dedicated to basketball and their play slips. That's a realistic possibility of players that get max or get big contracts. There is a certain sector of people that just happens to. So if you're buying, that's another thing to think about. It's not, I don't think that's the majority of people in the NBA. I think there's a small percentage of those types of players that kind of do that. But either way, I think if you need to look at that also as like, these people are real people. So like, you can't just assume that because they've been good their whole career that they're going to continue to be good. But that kind of adds to my point of where you should be looking to buy stuff long term. Like, if you're buying a KD card, I think, sure, you can buy it, and then I think a year from now, those KD cards are going to be worth a lot. And I think, or it is going to depend on how him and Kyrie kind of mesh together and how well they do. But I just think that KD is one of the best players. He's probably like a top 25 player of all time in his prime. And if he goes on to win a championship, I think that'll be cemented as like he'll always be in that conversation. But realistically, if you want to buy a KD card, my suggestion is just hold on to it until he makes the Hall of Fame, because he's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's a Hall of Famer at this point. So there's only upside with him. Like, and if he makes the Hall of Fame, I don't think people are going to be questioning whether... I don't think people are going to question whether he should or shouldn't have gone to Brooklyn. I think the fact that he went to Golden State and won the championships, I think... realistically, people are going to talk about people will talk more about how good of a player KD was than if he should have second guessed going to Brooklyn to get a max contract to play with Kyrie, and then basically to get Steve Nash as a coach they're pretty much Kyrie and KD and Steve Nash are going to be the three coaches on this team. Like, realistically, KD and Kyrie are also going to be parts of the coaching staff. They're not going to have the title of coaching staff, but that's who they wanted, because there's no way they sign KD and Kyrie to these monster contracts and then they don't ask them who they want as a coach. And they may want Steve Nash because they know that they can basically just run the team the way they want, and they don't necessarily have to worry about the coach trying to do something different. So back to the kind of the original point here is just that if you... my suggestion, what I think is probably the best strategy, and I think best strategy for me as well, because I've noticed with the Star Stock contest, I'm doing terribly, first of all. Second of all, I don't think I read the rules correctly, because I thought you had to sell all your cards by the end of the season. So I was buying to like flip in certain weeks. You know, like I said, hand up, that's on me. Also, I was buying before the season, which is like, I can't believe I was doing that, because like, that's when the hype for football was so much higher than it is now. And I bought a bunch of cards, and I still think some of the calls that I made are up in the air, but I do think that I may have made... because what I did essentially was I bought... and this is an example of buying short-term versus long-term. So the short-term, I was... for this season and for kind of certain weeks, I was buying back... I bought Brian Smith and... Brian Hill and Ito Smith, the backup running backs for Atlanta. And because I, for whatever reason, thought that Todd Gurley wasn't going to be as good as he used to be, so eventually they would bench him or he'd get hurt, which I think I was wrong. I don't think they're going to bench him. I think he's been phenomenal. I think realistically the only way that they're going to get playing time, or more playing time, because Brian Hill is pretty good as a backup and he's getting a decent amount of touches, but I was basically just buying the backups of the wrong team, because then I also was looking at Kenyon Drake, I think that's his name, versus Chase Edmonds, the backup in Arizona. And Drake had basically his first good game in like a while, and good game, it wasn't even that good. He just had a bunch of touches. Like, I think he had 16 rushes for like 80 yards or something like that. I was looking at Chase Edmonds to buy him, and I didn't. And then I think Chase Edmonds had a good game, and it kind of jumped up in price. If I had been buying him, I would have gone up. But the whole point at the end of the season is to have the best portfolio, not make the most money flipping the cards, which is I think I just didn't read the rules correctly, unfortunately. So that kind of stinks. But either way, so that was me looking at short-term. Also, football, you know, I'm still kind of getting back into the swing of things with football, so I'll say that as well. But the short term versus long term, in my opinion, you should be looking long term. And if you can hold these cards for as long as you can, then I would. That's another kind of point to that long term, is that you should be doing that and trying not to sell as long as you can. So that's all I've got for today's episode. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you for subscribing on iTunes if you've done that. If you left a review, thank you for leaving a review. There was a bad review on there for some reason. It only shows up in Canada. I'm not 100% sure why. But if that person's listening, I'd be interested to talk to them, because I always want to make the podcast better. And I don't exactly, they didn't really leave a specific feedback. It was a very broad, just that they don't like the podcast. So I'd be interested to hear why they didn't like the podcast. So that's going to be it. Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.